Johnson will serve as the lead panelist. So if you just hold on, the next voice you hear will be that of the Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson, sir.
Good morning, sir. Could you please state your name and your ADC number for me for the record?
Daniel
K. 40905. Okay, so you're appointed for the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I'm going to introduce you to the board members that will be conducting your hearing today. To my far left is the Honorable David Mill. Come down the line is the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chair. To my immediate left is the Honorable Luis Quinones. Mr. Quinones, and then my name is Michael Johnson. I'm going to be acting as a panel lead today, sir. So you're appearing before this board for a regular parole hearing, home arrest, or an absolute discharge. Is that what your understanding is, sir?
Yes.
You're currently serving a life sentence for first-degree murder. You became parole eligible on July 9th of 07, is that right?
Yeah.
All right.
You say so.
You began your sentence in December of 1979. According to your institutional progress report, sir, if you were released, that you would like to go to Mesa House and participate in various programming, is that right?
Yes.
Do you have any family that's here or anything, sir?
No.
Okay. It looks like that you have taken very little programming, but you have taken some programming. You completed your GED in 04, and then your last program looks like was in 09 for horticulture that you completed. Is that right?
No.
Okay.
I have three more certificates. I have one in commercial driver's license. Do you have a computer there that has a recent credentials file?
No, we don't have a computer here with us, sir.
I have the commercial driver's license. I have the forklift and what's the other one? There's another one. I forget. And I've been taking the NA class, but that's an ongoing thing that just goes on forever. I don't know when the completion is.
Okay. So you haven't had any discipline in the last 5 years, sir?
Yeah, longer than that.
Looks like your last discipline was in 09 for disobeying a verbal, which was a major. But prior to that, you had quite a lengthy list of almost 4 pages of added tickets that you have received since you've been incarcerated. What brought about that turn into an 09, sir?
I grew up.
Mm-hmm.
Got old. Not many down. Thank you.
You grew up, you got old. What does that mean?
Well, I used to get into a lot of fights, and now I just, if somebody does something, you know, steals something from me or something, I all of a sudden become diplomatic instead of wanting to fight about it. I don't get my stuff back, but prison thing, you know, you're living in prison, you're living with a bunch of people who don't, you know, I mean, it's so easy to get into a fight, you know, it doesn't matter whether you want to get into it or you don't want to get into it, and the other person may want to. You know, you get chunks around here who just decide they want to get in, you know what I mean? I moved from one side to the other side to a lesser custody. I had to strongly talk to the moving officer about it, because where I was living was just so much alcohol and so many chunks, and they're just getting into fights. And that's what I stressed to him. I told him, man, I'm trying to stay out of trouble. I don't want to be, the main thing is I don't want to be around these chunks because they're just getting into a fight with you, even though you don't have no problem with them. I want to get away from it. And where I'm at now, you don't have all that.
Okay. All right, so it looks like that in 2012, you were granted home arrest. Is that what you recall?
Yes.
Okay, and then looks like in 2013, your home arrest was revoked. Is that right?
Yes.
And the reasons that it was revoked is that you had a violation of the of your monitor along with the use of THC along with possession of a synthetic drug for spice. Are you still using drugs, or when was the last time you used drugs?
Then.
That was the last time you used drugs in 2013?
Yes.
Okay, according to the information that we have here and in the progress report that we have, this is an incident that occurred when you were burglarizing a home, and when you burglarized the house, a female came inside and saw you, and at that time she was standing in front of the door. You were trying to escape and get away, and you stabbed the victim while you were on the way out the door. A neighbor subsequently followed and chased you, and you were subsequently arrested. Is that about right?
Yes.
So, you were also an escapee from prison?
No.
On release from prison at the time that occurred, from another prison? Was it in California?
I had been doing some county jail time. And not from prison, but from a county jail. And they had put me in like a fire camp type deal. And I was like a sort of work release. And then I left from there.
Okay. So what was going on in your mind at that time that you got involved and you stabbed this victim here in Arizona?
What was going through my mind?
Yes, sir.
I just got into the house. I checked the back door to try to have a way out, and I couldn't get the back door open. And then I went to the front door, and the front door needed a key from the inside to open the door. I had never seen that well before, and so while I'm still staring at the, because I come into a little bathroom window, while I'm still staring at the lock, I heard a car drive up. When I went to the front window, and I'm real nervous now because I'm all, my brain's all scattered because now I'm panicking because it seems like the only way out of this house is to go through the way that I went in, through a little bathroom window. And I was bleeding all over the place too because I cut myself on this window. And I don't know how to get out quick. So I was looking out the front window to see if I could see a car in the driveway, but I can't see the driveway from the window. And just while I'm still standing at the front window, the front door opened. So now I'm like totally, you know, just panicking, you know?
So what happened?
She was yelling, swearing at me, want to do. But it just would. I had difficulty getting into the house before that. I think I burglarized 3 houses that morning. And on the second house, I had difficulty getting into the house, and I had to use a rock to cut the screen to get into the outside screen. And when I got in the house, I couldn't find any money or anything, but I did find this little buck knife. I didn't think of it as a weapon. I thought of it as a tool to help me get in, because I knew I was going to have to burglarize another house, or, you know, whatever, so I got some money. So I thought of it as a tool to cut the screen, to, you know, as a burglary tool. And I had that in my hand when I was walking up to the front door. And I can't really tell you from that moment. I know what it is. I know why it is. Whether you choose to believe this or not, I don't really care. I've read things where people have done things that to them is so traumatic that they blank it out of their conscience, you know. And I do remember swinging. I just don't remember why or what. But, and then I don't remember, really, it's like a blank.
Okay.
Until I was running out the door. So, if you ask me between then and running out the door, I don't know. It's a blank to me.
Okay.
I can't remember it.
So then,
and I really don't want to remember it, to be honest, which I don't want to be, you know. I'd rip my hair out and just so, you know, it's just to be remembering those things. So if you think that I don't have remorse because I don't remember it, then you're wrong. I don't want to remember it. I don't want to be. It's hard enough though to remember what I remember. That makes me feel such shame at myself, and I don't know the proper words for my feelings, but I know that it's like a horrific shame. I don't know how to define it.
Okay, so I'm going to read you a paragraph from the pre-sentence report that we have here. And in the pre-sentence report, it says, the defendant appeared to be very unconcerned and states he would probably do it again if it meant his freedom from arrest. He states he does not care if he is given life or death sentence, as he would be too old when he gets out anyway to live any kind of life on the outside and would only turn to more burglaries or similar crimes. Do you remember saying something similar to that, sir?
I don't think I ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think that a police officer who sees a kid who's crying and remorseful and just shocked at what he did, and if you think, and I know that there's an ex-police officer, but one of you guys is an ex-police officer, you're probably offended by this, but if you think that a police officer who believes that probably that this kid should die for what he did, and he's probably going to end up with a life sentence and be going to the parole board, and you think that he wouldn't embellish a little something, then you're wrong. Just like one of you people have embellished a little something. You said that the victim had 5 kids. And I remember going to the parole board, and it was one of you guys who said that. And the victim only had 1 kid. Why you said 5 kids, I don't know. I didn't say nothing at that time. Well, for the same reason that you, whoever it was that said 5 kids, That's the reason why that police officer said what he said. And all I ever said to the police officer was, I don't even remember ever saying anything about my feelings. I just said what I did it. I was guilty right off the bat, I told him. You know, and so I don't like it. I don't like it, these people with these little embellishments that they're trying to act. It's bad enough what I did, you know, and one of you guys said about the five kids. I don't like it. I don't know why you need to be doing things like that, and why this police officer needed to embellish his little thing about me.
Okay, well, Mr. Cahill, that wasn't a statement by the police officer. That was a statement that was by the parole officer who wrote the pre-sentence report. It wasn't a police officer, sir.
How could the parole officer who wrote the pre-sentence report?
Yes, sir.
One of these times that somebody said the same thing to me, because I've heard it before.
Okay.
Was that they said that the arresting officers, that was what I told the arresting officers.
Well, I can't vouch for it before, but the statement came from a statement that was written during an interview that you had with the parole officer for a pre-sentence report.
I don't remember any interview with no parole. I only remember talking to my lawyer one time before I got sentenced, and I don't remember anybody like that. And besides which, I never felt that way, and I never would feel that way. And so, it's...
Okay, well, I'm gonna move on, sir. And then, according to the pre-sentence report, the victim had three kids, is what it says. But I'm going to go on. So, sir, it looks like in September of 1991, you tried to escape from prison by getting into one of the bins of a Coca-Cola truck, and when the guy went to another yard, he opened the truck and found you inside. Is that about right?
Yes.
So what were you doing? Where were you going to go to?
Mexico. He's right there.
So, sir, when you were actually out in 2013 and you had gotten out, what type of drugs? Were you doing drugs when you got out?
No.
How did
I smoked marijuana one time.
What about the spikes?
The what? The spikes? Oh, I never even smoked that. I had just been given it. I had it in my pocket, and I was scared of it.
You were scared of it? Have you used any drugs?
I didn't know what to do. Huh?
Have you used any drugs since you've been in prison?
No. I've never really used drugs. I mean, no. I mean, I have, but before I was 16, I experimented quite a bit, but after I was 16, I just sort of stopped all drug use. I don't know what you consider drugs, but I pills and stuff, and I never did heroin or speed or anything like that. But I did LSD before I was 16, and then I just stopped doing all that stuff at 16. I just stopped. I had no. I smoked marijuana. I continued to smoke marijuana, but I just never. I stopped doing drugs. So I was never a drug addict, you know.
So
I've never had a needle in my arm, I never had, you know, all that stuff is repulsive to me, you know,
So do you have any family support?
I did for many years, but I don't now.
Why not?
Listen, my family lives in Connecticut. For 27 years, they make these big investments, coming out here to see me, and, you know, have to buy a hotel. prison and, you know, and things like my sister, I come out to visit one time and she's out in the visiting room crying and I ask her what's wrong and she says a dog barked at her and so she submitted to a strip search and so she came 3,000 miles to see me and this is what she gets for her emotional investment into me and you know, they can only put up with that for so long. They're not gonna, you know, and that my dad's dead and my mother, I don't know, you know, she's very old and my sisters are, you know, they got their kids and everything and they don't want to be bringing their children up here in prison with them
Tell me what has changed. You walked away from a facility that you were incarcerated on, I believe you said you were on a work crew and you walked away from there and came to Arizona and committed this murder. And then while you were in prison, you tried to escape again. Why is it we should believe that you wouldn't continue to
commit? Did I escape when you let me out?
No, you didn't abscond.
Yeah, I don't know why you're trying to, you know, that was 40 years ago.
But you were out, you started to use drugs, you did
have a violation.
You had a violation. In 2013, we had a violation of your monitoring system.
Yes.
You had spice in your possession, which was a drug, and you were smoking marijuana.
Yes.
Okay.
I had taken one hit off some marijuana. That's it. Where somebody I really didn't want to do it. I ended up doing it. Okay. My bad. I highly regret it. Of course. And it never happened again. Do you think I don't have my opportunities here to do it? Of course I do, but I don't. And as far as you want to put all the negatives, stress the negatives about my when I was released. Well. Why just look at the negatives? There's two sides to every coin. I got out there, I had nothing. I had no family support, no nothing. I got out there and I got a job. I got my own place. I went back and forth to work in Scottsdale. And I didn't have a great job. I worked at McDonald's, but hey, you know, I brought in a paycheck. What's the difference between me then or me now? And the guy that was 40 years ago, which was going back to the original question you asked me, that's the difference. That's the difference. That was a guy who was going to work and responsible for himself. And then when I got laid off from my job, and I kept trying to call the parole officer so that I get another job and be responsible for myself, and I kept going out and when he wouldn't answer the phone, all I got is his answer machine. I got the rent to pay. I need a job. And I would call and he wouldn't answer, so I need to go out and get a job. And so I would call, tell him where I was going, because I knew that was the main thing that they felt work that I'm accountable for myself. And so I told them, of course they know where I'm going. I'm on an ankle monitor. They know exactly where I'm going. So, but I told them, call them anyways, and I'll call them, and I call, get the answer machine, and tell them I'll stop it here, and at this bus stop, and every time the bus would stop at some place, I'd call them and tell them I'm getting out of the bus, I'm going to go on this other bus to go to this place. And when I got to that place, the job, I applied for the job, and three different job things. I filled out an application and then I went back home and then he called me up and when I, you know, 10 minutes after I got back to my apartment, which just boggles my mind, you know, because he's like keeping track of me, and he didn't answer the phone when, you know, for 10 minutes after I get back to my apartment, he's calling me, and he said, where'd you just go? And I told him, I just told you where I was going. I told you on your answer machine. And he said, well, you can't be doing that, you know, I violate your parole. And I'm thinking, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? What do you want to do? You know, I want to get a job, but you don't want me to get a job. How am I supposed to get a job if you want to let me go apply for a job? So I'm trying to do the responsible thing, but okay, if that's doing the wrong thing, if that's a parole violation, then, man, you know, I was thinking to myself, you know, how could this work? And those were the things that I was feeling when I ended up smoking that marijuana, because it's like this guy was like telling me I'm going back to prison. It's clear to me. I can't get a job. He's threatening to send me back to prison for going to look for a job. I know I'm being irresponsible. He's being irresponsible by not answering his phone.
Okay. So
it's not like it's a landline. Everybody has a cell phone. He's not answering. He's got it in his pocket.
Okay, so I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions for you. Mr. Quinones.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Mr. Caleb, can you hear me clearly?
Yes.
One thing that I want to account for is we do get information that's put in front of us, such as the pre-sentence report, letters from the prosecutor's office. There is reference, and I'm not going to get an argument with you, that the woman that you murdered was a mother, that at least they think she had several children. You're saying she only had one. The fact remains, you murdered the mother of a child. You did a long time in prison. It seems that you turned a corner in 2009 and were showing some good behavior and rehabilitation aboard on the behalf of the people of Arizona saw fit to grant you home arrest. You violated that home arrest by using marijuana. And what I'm hearing right now is someone who sounds like a victim. And it's disturbing to me that after what you've done, and some, at least to begin with, not so good behavior inside the prison system, you turn a corner. But I'm hearing a lot of victim language here. And that's hard, considering that a board took a chance on a convicted murderer to return to the community, and that this individual...
I'm back to the 8 hours.
That's my thought.
Okay, for the record, I just want to say that during the interview, Mr. Cahill made a statement basically saying he didn't want to hear what was being read to him or talked to him about in the reports that we have. He then set down the phone and walked out of the room. We're going to go ahead and continue his hearing in absentia with him not being here. I wanted to see if the board had any other comments or statements they wanted to make. If not, then I am going to go ahead and make a motion. I'm going to make a motion to deny Mr. Cahill regular parole, home arrest, or absolute discharge.
Second.
Agree.
That was my motion. Second by Mr. Quinones. Agree, Mr. Neal, and agree, Dr. Ryder. I'm also going to ask for, he's not eligible for a 1 year set off because I believe this crime happened in 1979. I am going to make a couple of statements before I go over the reasons for denial. Mr. Cahill committed this crime in 1979 while he was escaped or walked away from Cognitive documentation says prison, but he says he was in jail on a work program, then he walked away from the work program in 79, came out here to Arizona where he committed this murder and was convicted of the murder, then sentenced to prison, then after being sentenced to prison after 1979, in 1991, he attempted to escape from prison. During his attempt to escape, he hid inside of a Coca-Cola truck, one of the bins, and the truck drove to another yard. The driver opened up that bin and noticed that the prisoner was inside of it, called the detention officers who arrested him at that time. He was granted a parole in 2013. That parole was actually revoked about a year later after he was came up with a dirty UA for marijuana. He had violated his monitoring system, and he had also found in possession of spice that he had. Sir, could you set the phone down for a minute, please? Sir?
Would you hang up for a moment, please? We'll be right with you. Thank you.
I just wanted to know if another inmate had came up and picked the phone up. We just wanted to have him hang up so we can conclude this hearing at this time. That he was granted parole in 2013, violated a year later. As I said, he was in possession of spice. He had violated the monitoring system as well as had a 30 UA for marijuana. Therefore, the reason for his denial for his things, that it was a serious and violent offense, it was a loss of human life. He does have a, I'm going to mark that he violated previous parole rates because he was in custody when he left there and he was had a warrant. He does have a history of substance abuse as well as a history of assaultive behavior. I'm also going to mark his prior criminal history, a repeat offender. Although he had not had any disciplinary actions in the last 5 years, he's had almost four pages of disciplinary infractions. So I'm going to put four institutional behavior. He had a history of softer behavior. I'm also going to mark a lack of program, no family support. I'm going to mark poor demeanor during hearing. And he had I'm going to consider it a poor release plan that he actually had. Those are going to be the reasons, unless the board have some other statements that they would like to actually make. Taking that information, that is going to conclude the hearing. And Mr. Daniel Cahill, ADC number 40905. Thank you.